Hi, I'm Matthew Blades, and Learn from People Who Lived It has a great partner, ASI, or Advanced Systems Integration. They design and install cutting-edge audio and visual equipment. This woman-owned small business is big enough to find a solution for your next corporate build-out or school project, and can even slide in to service your existing system. Bring in ASI and 2 decades of AV experience. I hope you'll visit their website at asi-av.com to see their gallery of work.
Welcome to another episode of Learn from People Who Lived It.
Hi, my name is Cheryl and I'm 56 years old.
What story are you here to share?
I am here to share family dysfunction, possibly a parent that is narcissistic, and just judgment that created all these beliefs that maybe don't work anymore.
Who do you hope hears this?
Anyone that's having that same issue, that is just feeling stuck and uneasy and not knowing where to go in life and why it all feels so different. You look at your family and like, why am I so different?
Our next guest is, well, she has a similar story to me. She lost her father at a young age, 18 to be exact. And as you heard, she grew up with what she believes to be a pretty narcissistic mother. And Troy DeSmit from Spirit Quest alongside me this morning. Hi to everybody.
Good morning, Matthew. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
So let's just dive right in. How we're starting most of these shows, Cheryl, is kind of that 0 to 10 lens. So if you don't mind, walk us through what the first 10 years of your life are all about, family, you know, the situations around it, kind of the vibe with mom, dad, brothers, sisters, that whole thing. What is your life like from 0 to 10?
I think it's pretty normal. Grew up in the Midwest, had a house. There was 6 of us, so I have 3 siblings. And pretty normal. You know, both my parents worked. So, you know, that early stage, I don't quite remember, but I know we had a house at some point and just really happy and life was great. And then I think dad wanted to start a business. And so they ended up selling the house and it just kind of seemed to fall apart a little bit from there. Maybe, you know, as I look at it from an adult standpoint, that their relationship might have been affected from that.
What is the situation like between you and your mom, you and your dad? Is it a good relationship, bad relationship, brothers and sisters? What's the relationship like there?
Again, I think it's all pretty normal at that stage. I think growing up, like discipline-wise, my mom was a yeller. She was never physically abusive, but she was definitely a yeller. You know that when you did something wrong that you were going to get reamed for it. And even, you know, issues in school. I think for me, I don't know how my siblings felt, but for me, it was, you had to kind of toe the line, you know, you had to do this and you had to do that, you know, which is expected of most kids, I think. But I think for some reason I took it more personally and it really affected me, I think, in a negative way to not be understood why maybe things weren't kind of going right.
This has all the makings of a transitional character in her lineage, doesn't it, Troy? Feels that way to me.
It absolutely feels that way. It sounds like Cheryl, you're a sensitive person who experiences.
I am. Yeah. Very much.
Yeah.
Have you heard that expression before, Cheryl, a transitional character in your lineage?
I have. Yeah. Actually, yeah. I've looked into a lot of that recently.
And?
I did a couple exercises with a coach that, it's called, for her, it was family constellation therapy. And so she did an exercise where you're kind of thanking your ancestors and recognizing what they went through and maybe how hard it was and, just saying, I love you. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that kind of a thing. And so you're kind of breaking that bond of, carrying on those negative, hard feelings.
Amen to that. I mean, what she just said could heal the world if we could all just step back, right? And it's the it's bigger than you, right? It's bigger than you. Whatever you're experiencing now is the sum of all of its parts for 13 billion years and blah, 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 blah. And now we... But Troy, I want you to speak. I mean, I love that we're this far, that we're going to get into this close into the podcast. But Troy, let's talk about transitional characters in your lineage and what that means and what that feels like.
What I can say about transitional characters are the spiritual warriors, that the bodies that we've chosen, that we're into, why we've entered into it at this point in time, and the warriors that we are, understanding that these patterns have been set up before us. Sometimes long before us, many generations before us. And it's the opportunities that we have once we become aware of the patterns that have been set up for us. Once we become aware of that, our choice, our freedom of choice to decide that is not who we are. That is not the story that we want to continue to perpetuate in our lives. And that we have the choice to make a decision to make that change within our own lineage. And the strength and the courage that it takes to endure what we've endured, to decide, and then to make a choice to do something different about it.
That's his way of paying. That's his way of paying you a huge compliment, Cheryl. That's the warrior you are, and it really is to be applauded. And I like the spiritual awakening that's taking place in people with this bit about being a transitional character in your lineage, because there's many of us that had those feelings growing up, like maybe I don't belong, maybe this is a little bit of an odd fit to me, and it's a weird gnaw, it's a weird sense of that you grow up with, and you can never really put your finger on it until maybe you get older and you're faced to deal with some really tough stuff, which is where I want to take us. So we got 0 to 10. I think I have an understanding of what's going on. You're a teenager now, and at 18, you lose your father. What's happening here, Cheryl? Is he sick leading up to it? Is this a surprise? Talk to me about that.
He was a truck driver by trade. Actually, I think he might have went back to that. Or I don't know. I don't know at that point. I think he was a truck driver. And so he was also a diabetic. He had type 1 diabetes, which means that you had gotten it. It's not having to do with health issues. And so he had it not all his life, but in his early 20s, he developed diabetes. And he wasn't supposed to be an over-the-road truck driver with this disease. And so somehow he had gotten a doctor to write him a release and okay for him to go ahead and drive truck. And so he was on a haul when what we learned later was that he was not feeling well, pulled off to the side of the road in a truck stop, vomited and choked and died.
I'm sorry.
And it was really hard at the time, obviously. But as we all readjusted, and I think before that it was maybe not as hard of an adjustment because my parents were divorced. And so he was already out of the house. We were already trying to make that transition into, you know, having two households, you know, going to visit dad kind of a thing. But, it was still hard, obviously, because he wasn't there. And I was just coming at the point, you know, coming into adulthood, wanting to know him as an adult, right? My sister was a little older than me, so she was already starting to have that kind of relationship with him, but left at a point where couldn't have that.
Yeah, and I can only imagine that you were the same teenager that most of us are. And, you know, those teenage years with mom and dad are not always the easiest or the smoothest. And was there anything for you that you, at 18, was there something you left on the table with your dad? Was there anything you left on the table with your dad, or were you able to say the things that you needed to say to him?
We didn't have a bad relationship by any means. I didn't have a bad relationship with him. I know my two younger siblings, one in particular did. And so that's been a lifelong issue for that one. But, for me, I didn't have any ill will. I didn't have any things that I wanted to say or didn't get a chance. It was just, I think for me, looking back on that time now, it's the moving forward, knowing him as an adult and for him to know me as an adult and have that relationship and that person to go to when things go bad. Yeah.
What I'd love to talk about was when your dad dies, what does that do to the family dynamic? Does it change things in any way? Do people start to become distant? Do they become closer? What happens to, for example, your relationship with your brothers and sisters, your mom? You know, what happens to those people?
I think it did both. I think in the immediate aftermath, I think we did become closer for a time. And then I think as it started to roll out and people kind of started, you know, as we all started to live our own lives, I think we separated. We didn't stay close. And I don't know if that has anything to do with his passing. I do know that that was the beginning of our separation as a family, I think.
Cheryl, you shared with me that you've kind of always wanted a loving family. And, let's talk about that for a little bit, because what it sounds like to me is that gnaw has always been there for you to want those things, but have you felt like you've had those things?
In the last 10 or so years, no, not at all. I mean, I think what would be nice is, you know, as we go through things in life, you know, say separation partners or, you know, just things happen, loss of jobs, sure. You know, I often hear people say, well, I really have the support of my family. And I never felt like I had that. Like there was always, I think there might've been, oh yeah, I'm sorry, you're going through that kind of a thing, but it wasn't like envelop you in your arms and let me love you. And if you need me, I'm here kind of a thing. It never really quite felt that way.
As you look back on that now with your adult lens, how did that impact you in your decision-making?
Greatly, I think. yeah, what's just hard is thinking back and just how those feelings felt, like not being supported, like I really had somebody to say, I love you, I'm here, no matter what it is, no matter if it's me, you know, let me love you, let me be here for you. I think it's affected me greatly. It's affected all of my relationships.
I think this is a really important time to switch gears into this narcissistic bit, because as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, and maybe others who are listening are thinking, man, why aren't you getting this from your mom? Why aren't you getting this from your dad? Where are other people in your life to give you these things? And your story is really one of narcissism. And this is a word that we are starting to hear a lot more. And I'm going to be honest. I wanted to go to Google. I wanted to see how it's defined there. But then I'm going to really ask both of you to have a conversation about it. So here's what I find, man. How do you tell if someone's narcissistic? They say grandiose a sense of self-importance. They live in a fantasy world that supports their delusions of grandeur. They need constant praise and admiration, a sense of entitlement. They exploit others without guilt or shame. They frequently demean, intimidate, bully, or belittle others. Since both of you have experienced narcissism on the highest levels, I want to defer to Troy first. Talk to me about what narcissism means to you.
Narcissism to me is along a spectrum where on one end of the spectrum, we can have deep empathy. And on another end of the spectrum, we can have what I believe to be less than actually 1% of the population, which would be classified as narcissistic. Narcissism has to do with manipulative behavior, controlling behavior, and possession and ownership of the other, and a dependence on the other to fill the needs of the narcissist. Ultimately, the damage done to the self-esteem and the self-worth of the one that is being manipulated can be devastating, can take years to overcome, and can take years to regain themselves and to really appreciate themselves and understand that they have emotion and that they are safe and able to express that emotion and that it isn't going to be deemed or judged as wrong. It ultimately has to do with, to me, worth and sanity. Because when we're in a narcissistic relationship, we can really begin to question who we are, what we're doing, and why we are the ones that are bad or wrong. And it can be very devastating to the people that are actually being in that manipulative relationship.
Especially somebody sensitive like you, Cheryl. Especially somebody sensitive like you. So I'll ask you the same question. What does narcissism mean to you?
I love everything you just said, Troy. That is so, so true. And I resonated with a lot of it. And I think for me, it was gradual. It was, at least to me, it seemed gradual until it got to the point where I'm like, how can I, it's like I couldn't make a move. But I mean, the gradual in the sense that, you know, you want to honor, right? You want to honor your parents and you respect that they're, opinions and their insight is valid and meaningful to your life. And so I think in turn, going back just a little bit, I think I always wanted to be the good girl because I had the other siblings were, I don't know, after we all separated. So I think I just wanted to be the good girl. And I got along with my mom great for years. And then we had a situation in the family that kind of separated us and separated our ideals and our opinions and perspective about what should happen. And that's when I really started to look at kind of from the outside, because it was, why do I have to do it the way you say I do it? Why do I have to, buck up and just accept it? And it was my whole self-esteem crashed, realizing that I've been manipulated and controlled for so many years, and some of them not even realizing it. When I finally started realizing it, it took me into such a deep, dark hole that I didn't know how to get out.
I think narcissism can sneak up on you, or manipulative behavior when we're in the relationship with a manipulative person. So many of us grow up in conditions where it's normal and it's normalized. And we think that everyone is going through something very similar to ourselves when in truth, it isn't that way. It's not always that way. And as a child, what I heard, Cheryl, from you was, the yelling that your mother would often do. And I also heard from you how you wanted to be the good girl. And in these manipulative type of explosive, even at times, relationships, as children or as married couples, as a married person, we can walk around as if we're walking on eggshells or thin ice. And that if we do or say something that's out of line, we have the potential to witness an explosion from the partner or the parent that can absolutely tear us and break us down. And absolutely. And that's the part of it that creeps up over a period of time when oftentimes we don't even realize we're in that type of an environment. And then the blow up happens and we run to the mirror. And we look at ourselves in the mirror and we say, who am I? Am I bad? Am I bad? And then we start to question and doubt ourselves in what we see with so many things taking place, whether it be, the gaslighting, which is really causing us to question our own sanity. Mm-hmm. A number of different tactics and techniques that people use to control and manipulate. But that's what comes to my mind, Cheryl, immediate when I listen to your story about the yelling and wanting to be the good girl to not upset your mom.
Yeah.
Do you think that she became more narcissistic after your father died, or did he just absorb more of it and now more of it was falling on you?
I would say yes, that he probably absorbed more of it. Because I've heard, you know, little stories here and there, even from the other side, his side of the family. Yeah, I think that's the kind of what's created the divorce, right? Because she was probably, I don't know, maybe not, I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know. I don't want to speak about that. But yeah, I think he probably absorbed it. Even now, I talk to him, even, you know, of course, that he's dead. I had a really neat talk with him one day. Actually, it was on my drive back from Sedona one day. And I was talking to him like he was sitting in the car. It was just me. I was alone. And I'm like, I wish you were here so I could, you know, talk to you and ask you and see your opinion and like why. And if you could just give me the insight, you know, his insight as to like, you know, she's always been this way. And, you know, so it was a great talk. I felt great when I got home, but...
I'll bet you did. And in those moments, don't you feel like you received the answer?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you do get the answer. It's amazing how just opening up, you can get what you need. You know, one of my favorite exercises from my retreat was just to throw my right hand over my heart, close my eyes, and ask myself, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? Until it shows up. And it is incredibly powerful to do that. I would like to ask both of you, if you can, if somebody's listening to our podcast right now and they've heard this term gaslighting before, they've heard this narcissistic word before, can you think of examples where that have shown themselves so people can go, oh, okay, me too. Because I don't know if it's enough to just say, you know, there was gaslighting. What does that look like?
Well, for me, it would be... well, how could you do it that way? Don't you know that we do it this way? And, oh, you're crazy for thinking that. You're just being sensitive, you know?
Troy, for you, what was it like?
You know, for me, it was like, it truly was like walking around my home on eggshells as if my partner could explode at any moment. It had a lot to do with worthiness. So there were a lot of underhanded jabs, a lot of words that were spoken to demean, to demoralize. There was a lot of threats, threats around, you know, I'm going to commit suicide. I'm going to take you for everything you're worth. I'm going to take your children away from you. It has to do with control and power. There's a hierarchy in the relationship where the manipulative person seeks to manipulate the inferior or who they perceive as the inferior. And it's in that control and all the ways that it can be done. And it can be done through sexual exploitation. It can be done through breadcrumbing. Breadcrumbing to me was an experience where when I felt as if I was not receiving the love was not being reciprocated to me, and the attention was as if I was number 10 on the priority list, that if I was to bring something like that up, to be told to pull your bootstraps up, to be told you're overly sensitive, buck up, be a man, that my feelings were not validated. They weren't even regarded. And occasionally there would be a point where the behavior would change for a day or two. And then the pattern would fall right back in. And it really has to do with being put number 10 on the priority list and not validated, and your feelings being dismissed, your emotions being dismissed. And if you do express your emotions or your feelings, to have them disregarded as being wrong.
Cheryl, does that resonate with you?
Oh, absolutely. Every bit of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Gosh, it's just unbelievable that you have to be around that. And I'm drawn to ask you both, is it possible to be in a relationship with a narcissist? It sounds like if they truly are that person, the only option is eject.
Well, and that was kind of what I did. Although now I'm learning it's all about boundaries. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when they get to the point, and I actually had this experience recently with my mother that, you know, we were getting along a little bit better, and something happened, and she just kind of had to get a dig in there. And I'm like, well, okay, it's time for me to go. And just kind of put those boundaries in place.
I like that, Troy. It isn't about ejection. It's about boundaries.
I think you nailed it, Cheryl. It's all about boundaries. It's, you know, I look at it like training a dog, if I could be so blunt. When we say no, we mean no. And when no happens, that boundary, if it's continually crossed, we have to learn to enforce those boundaries. And there's a number of ways to do that. The ejection, certainly, or leaving or divorce or removing ourselves from that relationship is entirely something that is within, I think, someone who's being abused, every right. They have every right to leave. Otherwise, it can be about boundaries and really being clear about the boundaries. One of the statements that I've learned that has really helped me is that I'm not willing to be in relationship with anyone that manipulates me. And I'll say that to myself hundreds of times. And what does that mean? That when we do establish the boundary, which is interesting, Cheryl, that when you established it with your mother, she couldn't deal with it. And she left and moved away from that boundary. And it has to do with our own self-esteem and our own self-worth, and that we do deserve to be happy, and that we do deserve to feel love and to be loved and to feel safe and to be able to safely express how we feel, knowing that it's not wrong the way we feel. It just is the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still working on that boundary. So it was me that actually put the distance between us. And continues to do so until I can get more experience and just get that boundary in place.
I was in retreat, and one of the things that I wrote down that was very poignant to me was to make boundaries with your wise self, right? So many of us set boundaries while we're hurt, and that's why we keep sort of letting our guard down, you know, because we make our boundaries while we're hurt. Troy, how do we get to a healed enough space to make a really sound boundary?
Well, I think it can really help to work with coaches. I think it can help to work with therapists. I think it can help to work with other people that have been through these types of situations who can be there as a sounding board and listen to the person who is undergoing the abusive, manipulative behavior. To validate them and how they feel is oftentimes, it's eye-opening. It's an awakening experience when you are able to listen to someone who's going through it and to give them that space to help them to begin to understand what it is that they're going through. I think that's a big one. So I think coaches are invaluable in that way. YouTube, looking at YouTube, reading about narcissism, reading about manipulative behavior in all of its various guises can also help when you start to identify with some of the tactics that are used to control your yourself can also be very helpful to begin to grow an awareness of this. This type of relationship, because all change, as we know, starts in the mind. And once we become aware of it, then we can learn more about it, and then we can seek out ways to change it. And boundaries are certainly that way. There's a lot of great books on how to establish boundaries and how to enforce boundaries. Yeah. Because, you know, so often in the manipulative relationships, we can establish a boundary by making it known through words or through our voice. And when we're truly in a manipulative relationship, those boundaries will continually be crossed until eventually there are times when we need to leave that relationship. And that's a very difficult thing to do if it's your partner or if it's your parent. And really, ultimately, it has to do with self-preservation. Getting to the conclusion that we are worth it and that we do deserve happiness and we can take a stand for ourselves and we can leave a relationship that is not healthy for us. Sometimes the most difficult thing we can do in this life is to leave someone that we love because they're not good for us. Mm-hmm. And it takes an incredible amount of strength and time away to begin to find that peace and that worth again within ourselves. How does that feel? Is that what you experienced, Cheryl?
Yes, absolutely. And that's absolutely what I had to do. I did have to disconnect for a while. There's still one member, one sibling that I'm not comfortable being around yet. So that might take some practice, but I just absolutely had to disconnect and go, you are making me feel unworthy. And I mean, I got so far down that I didn't know if I really wanted to be on this earth anymore. Yeah. And I mean, when it got to that point, I'm like, what am I doing? Why, what?
Yeah.
How can this be that way? How can two people in the world make me feel so horrible?
And isn't it wild because you're a parent now, right, Cheryl?
Yes.
Troy, you have kids. I have kids. I mean, just the thought of my children coming to see me, walking into this office right now where I'm sitting and saying, Dad, I got to be honest. Our whole life, you just really made me feel unworthy. Oh, my goodness gracious.
I know. You know? I couldn't. Oh.
It's Matthew, you know, all kids are going to experience moments where they don't feel worthy. And sure. It's nothing that, you know, we're doing intentionally as parents. But in a really, truly manipulative relationship, it is about power and it is about hierarchy. And if it's a parent and a child, it's demeaning the child. It's guilting the child or the parent or the partner. But guilt mm-hmm. and blame and the other not truly ever taking ownership for their own behavior, where the other is always put in that place of being powerless and controlled, whether it be emotional control, physical control, mental control, or spiritual control. All of these types of concepts can be used to control the one that's being abused. And it can be devastating. It can take, and if it's gone on for years, you can imagine the years of conditioning that needs to be broken free from. So you're absolutely a warrior for what you have gone through and where you are today in your life, learning these steps to take these to take the not the control back, but to take yourself back and to remember who you are, to remember that you are worthy of love and of your own happiness and that you are responsible for your happiness. Because I think a lot of times with narcissists, a narcissist's worth and happiness is dependent upon how far down they can push the other to make themselves feel better about who they are.
Yeah. Absolutely. And thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it. I've done a lot of hard work, a lot of crying, a lot of times in nature, a lot of times in Sedona. Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, one of the things that we talked about at the onset is that you are somebody who's kind of into the laws of attraction. Now you're in a headspace where you're like, okay, I can create my life. Things can be different. I can choose a different outcome for myself. I want to talk about when you became a mom, and I want to talk about what your relationship is like with, is it a son or a daughter?
Son.
You know, because of the way you grew up, you know, we all have these experiences where, at least I did when I was a kid, you know, and I would get disciplined or there would be this or there would be that. I'm like, well, I'm not doing that to my kid when I grow up. How has parenting your son been different because of what you went through?
So when I had him, I mean, you're looking at that little baby and go, I want the best life that I can give you that's possible for me within my realm. I was a single mom. Dad took off when he was 6 months old. And so I was a single mom. And so I was mom and dad. It was hard at times, you know, financially. And, you know, even though I was a homeowner, it was still really hard. But in the end, it was every decision I made, every place I went, he was the consideration for anything and everything. And when I had the thought of not being on this earth anymore, he was the first thing that came to my mind. I'm like, I can't leave him with that, you know, first not having a dad and then not having a mom. I mean, like, that's just not even possible. And so it was a brief, very, very brief thought that I had of that. But raising him is great. And when I talk to him now, he's just, oh, he's such a fabulous person. So caring. And he's actually part of the reason that started me on this path and started asking those questions, like, why do we do it this way? And why this, why that? And when I didn't have any really good answers, it was like, well, why do I do it this way? Yeah. So I think even just raising him has been, it was hard. And, you know, I admit that I yelled at him as well. And in those really frustrating parental times. But I felt bad, you know, about it. So it didn't happen real often. But when something would come up, we would sit down in what I used to call table talks. And, you know, everything is off, TV's off, you know, no electronics. It was just him and I talking and basically saying, this is how I feel about what's happened in this situation, and kind of make that an open line where he can say, well, this or that, and this is why I did it, or this is how I felt. And so to this day, you know, when we get together, he's 23 now, living on his own, and we'll get together and just have the best talks and about anything and everything. We could go from, you know, home maintenance to politics, and it's awesome.
I love everything about that. You manifested that for yourself, Cheryl. I mean, you did. As a little girl, you decided that, you know, I didn't get this sensitivity. I didn't get somebody talking to me about my feelings. And whether you consciously did it or knew it or not, you manifested this relationship with your son. And now it's absolutely a beautiful thing. And you wonder, would I have been that same mom if I had a different mom? And that's where this expression that I love and hate comes in, which is, you know, there are certain things that happen to us, but there are certain things that happen for us. And yeah. Taking ownership of your story is oftentimes, at least for me, was really the most important part. Like, okay, hold on a second. The story was owning me for so long. I had to take control of the story, and then I had to learn who was going to drive from now on. Do you find that to be your experience too?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely in the driver's seat, and I know whatever good or bad comes to me, it's because of what I created. So,
you mentioned habits in our pre-interview, and so let's just, as we wrap up here, let's talk a little bit about habits. Let's talk about bad habits. Let's talk about good habits. What were some bad habits that you think you were into, maybe even, you know, before you even had your own kids?
You know, obviously the drinking, although I didn't take it to an extreme, but I think for me, the biggest part of downfall of my life was relationships. I would, enter into relationships thinking I could fix the other person or that I could, just not be alone. I just didn't want to be alone. So you stay in something that's, you know, is not right, but it's better than being alone.
Do you think you can ever have a healthy relationship with your mom?
The experiences that we've had recently are not horrible. And like I said, I think the boundaries help in knowing that I can place those and not have it be pushed back and me feeling bad. It's like, I need this for me. And so I think hopefully eventually still, she's, you know, she's aging, and so who knows what's going to happen, but, I'm hopeful.
Amen. Amen. I want to wrap up with that family constellation exercise and just talk a little bit more about it in the kind of detail that might help other people just kind of work this out in their own head. Obviously, all of these things are better. And we always talk about our goal here is like, you know, number one, make sure people don't feel alone. Number two, turn them on to a therapy, a church, a best friend, somebody that can help them work through these things, a mentor. And then number three, when you're ready, share your story with us. So this is a cool exercise. So how did it go for you, Cheryl? And you don't have to be specific if you don't want to, but how would you teach somebody to do this exercise?
So she basically has you, it's kind of three pieces of paper. She says doing it over Zoom is a little different than doing it in person, but three pieces of paper. The first one is you. The second one is your parents or immediate family, and the third is all of your ancestors. And so I think the first step was we stood on the first paper that was us, faced our ancestors and said, I see you, what you went through, and I honor you. Recognize that what you went through is really hard, and I love you, and you no longer have to carry this anymore. And then kind of saying those same things to your parents' generation, that parent level, and then turning around like to your future and saying, I will no longer carry this. I honor my ancestors, but you no longer have to. Basically saying, you know, I will carry this for you and I forgive you for everything that you went through and honor you and love you.
I think family constellation work or reconstruction work, where we go back and realize what our ancestors have been through, can be changed. It can be forgiven. It can be released and let go of. I also look back on family constellation work and I see the harvest of the gifts and the resources and the strength and the perseverance and the resilience that our ancestors demonstrated can also be harvested. And we can realize that not only the mistakes that were made, but the incredible acts of courage that our ancestors have taken and gone on great adventures for their own benefit. And that within us is that same power to make a choice for ourselves, to improve our lives, and to have that courage to take that risk for our own benefit, because we really do truly all deserve to be happy.
Thank you for listening to Learn From People Who Lived It. A reminder again that ASI, or Advanced Systems Integration, designs and installs cutting-edge audio and visual equipment. This woman-owned small business is big enough to find an AV solution for your next boardroom, classroom, council chambers, or courtroom. Bring in ASI and two decades of AV experience. Visit ASI-AV.com to see their gallery of work.
We have three goals with Learn From People Who Lived It. 1, to help you feel less alone. 2, encourage you to seek out a coach, a therapist, a church, anyone who can help you get through your journey and find some healing. 3, when you're ready, share your story with us.